on 2FM. With Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Emma Power for getting us to the end of the week. It's Friday, the 11th of June, and this is Game On. Coming up today, the Euros are finally here. Stephen Kelly and Paul Corrie are in studio ahead of kickoff in Rome between Turkey and Italy.
I think that Mancini has done extremely well, and I'm keen to see them because they're all the generations, the Chiellini, Bonucci, of course, older now, and the younger generation. What it is a country that can always be efficient. They have a culture of efficiency, and it will be interesting to see that.
And before the Euros begin, the girls in green are underway in their friendly against Iceland. We'll have live updates.
Against Iceland, we feel that we can jump a level on both sides, both defensively and in attacking wise. And that is why we went for this opponent.
We'll check in on tonight's return of fans. Also, we've Jane Mangan on racing, and we'll preview this weekend's Allianz League with two All-Star analysts.
Great catch in the middle of the park by Shane McGrath, crossing the 65-metre line. Still Shane McGrath. That is a terrific score. Keith Higgins, still Higgins. It's another goal here. Oh, that is magical. They're on their feet to applaud that.
Now you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn on 2FM.
Now, I mentioned at the very top of the programme that the Republic of Ireland women's team are in action in a friendly against Iceland. Tony O'Donoghue has live updates. Tony.
Hi there, how are you doing?
We're good, yeah. I'm also in studio, Tony, with Stephen Kelly and Paul Corrie. We're all glued to this game.
Yeah, 2 minutes and 33 seconds gone in the game. Windy enough experience as well for the Ireland players playing in Reykjavik in front of 1,500 people. Iceland on the attack already as we speak. And there's been some changes for Ireland. In fact, Aoife Colville will make her debut for Ireland this evening. Remember, she's 20 years of age. She plays with Glasgow City. She helped them to a 14th place finish in the Scottish Women's Premier League title after receiving her FIFA international clearance only on Tuesday. She's starting. That's in place of Cara Caruso. There's a change in goal as well since the defeat to Belgium in April. Grace Maloney comes in for Courtney Brosnan, Niamh Farrelly for Ali Murphy, and Jamie Finn is in the Irish midfield in place of Little John. Louise Quinn winning her 85th cap at the heart of the Irish defence. Now, of course, these games against Iceland are all part of the preparation for the 2023 Women's World Cup campaign. That Women's World Cup in Australia and New Zealand, of course. We begin the campaign against Georgia in September. But in our group, we have the likes of Sweden and Finland, who are the top two seeds. So they reckon that a game against Iceland, ranked 17th in the world, will do us the power of good. Another game on Tuesday as well, of course. So looking forward to that. The Irish players took a knee before the game, by the way. A lot of the players for the week that's in it as well, wearing the rainbow laces for Pride Week. And yeah, we're looking forward to a good performance from this Irish team.
Absolutely, Tony. We'll check in with you a little bit later on. Now, Paul and Stephen are with me, Paul Corrie and Stephen Kelly. The Euros are finally here, lads. It feels like a really long time. Well, it is a really long time because we were supposed to be on last year in 2021 now. They're still calling it Euro 2020, but I think it is still really exciting, Paul, because we've had this extended build-up. A lot has happened in the last year. We're waiting for this. It is the Euros, and it's a great competition.
Ah, it is, and it's great to get the Euros underway, and we've got some mouth-watering fixtures coming up over the next couple of days, and it'd be interesting to see which kind of countries come to the fore and which players are going to really take the bull by the horns and lead their sides going forward. So, you know, there's obviously a lot of hype about England, and the further England seem to go in the competition, the more interesting it seems to be for ourselves, but It's an interesting one. Obviously, a big fixture tonight between Italy and Turkey, and that will set the tone for the rest of the tournament. But the fact that we're able to get fans into some stadiums, the fact that there's fixtures, three fixtures every day for the next 2 weeks or so, we're going to be glued to the tellies, Marie.
Yeah, lucky the teachers that are off and will be able to sit around and watch it all. It'll be brilliant. So Turkey and Italy is kicking off. It is the opening game a little bit later on, Stephen. Some people are tipping Turkey to be the dark horse. I'm not so sure to be one of the dark horses. What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, they've
they've been in very good form of late, producing some really good results, unbeaten in the last 6-7 games, I think, going into the tournament. But Italy as well, who've kind of gone under the radar, and you normally don't let Italy go under the radar, but they have slightly. They've been unbeaten in their qualifying campaign. They've gone on an unbelievable run of winning games back, I think it's 10 in a row.
They've only conceded 4 goals.
Yeah, 4 goals. They're in excellent form going into this. They've got the top goal scorer in the Serie A this season in Immobile. It makes out for a really good game, and it's a proper test for Turkey, who are a lot of people are afraid of them, but they have got some. Tosun missing is going to be a big one for them, I think, because he's been influential. He was a top goal scorer throughout their campaign to qualify for this. But yeah, there's some amazing games and a lot of talent on show throughout the whole tournament.
The beauty of it is, Paul, that you can make a case for quite a lot of teams if you just sit down and put your mind to it. There are a lot of contenders. A lot of people tip in France, but it still feels like it's quite wide open, like anything could happen. So for you, who are the contenders?
Yeah, I mean, you first and foremost go to that Group F, which is the group to death, and you're looking at France, Germany and Portugal, and you feel that the three of them are probably most likely to come out of that group. And once they do, you'll probably be a bit of a foolish man to bet against either one of those three. For me, I don't know why. It's probably because I watched Germany during the week, but I just have a feeling that there's something about that squad. You look at kind of the back, and I think Hummels and Rudiger have a decent partnership. They've got Neuer behind them, and from there you've got a really good platform and a basis to go attack. Then with the likes of Gnabry, Sané, Müller, Havertz, I just think they've so much going forward, and I think they can own the ball in possession, but they can also hurt you in behind with the pace. Combine that with the fact that a lot of players actually play together at Bayern Munich and have done so down through the years, the likes of even Toni Kroos, who would have played with a lot of these players. That stands to you, because you haven't got a lot of time in the lead up to these competitions to actually blend together and know how each other play. And I think that the togetherness about that squad, the foundation at the back, the solidity that gives you, and then the creativity from your Gundogans and the four players like I mentioned, I think that gives them a really good chance. And Germany, efficient, they always get to the latter stages. If they can get to the semi-finals, finals, I think they're going to be there, thereabouts.
And they're going to get tested in the early stages as well. And if they can come through that, as we've seen with a lot of teams, that they will grow in a competition, that it will stand to them as they move forward.
Absolutely, and in any competition like this, you have to beat the best to get to the final. So if it's in the group stages or last stages, ideally you wouldn't want to have it in a group stage. But yeah, there's a feeling about Germany, especially with Joachim Löw's last tournament in charge, and there's a group of younger players coming through as well. And you just look at across the board, the German players in the last two seasons, the amount of those players that have been in Champions League finals, semi-finals, all of them around the start have been in the Champions League final or been at the top teams in Europe for the last few seasons with Bayern Munich or Chelsea or Man City. And you're going to think these players have been there, done it in good form, producing week in, week out for the club. So yeah, absolutely. But honestly, there's some of the talent that's on display, and you look at France and you think if they're on form, you know, we were talking before about Kante, and I just think he is just unbelievable. He will allow that front three, and you think now that's mouth-watering of Griezmann, Benzema and Mbappe, and you kind of think that's ridiculous.
Yeah. How do you defend against that?
Yeah, exactly.
And Mbappe is an interesting one, because when you're talking about golden boots, Paul, he is somebody that you are putting into that category from the off.
He is, and I do fear for Hungary within that group, and they could be the whipping boys. And if somebody was to bang in one or two or three against Hungary, well, then that could kind of give you the confidence for the remainder of the tournament to crack on from there. Here's one for you, though. I fancy Lukaku for the golden boot. I was just looking at the statistics earlier, Marie. 93 caps for Belgium, 60 goals, and he's just gone 28. He's got a serious supply line behind him. Kevin De Bruyne, Hazard, Carrasco's had a super season for Atletico Madrid. The group they're in isn't the worst. I think they've Denmark, Finland and Russia. And if he can rack up a few goals there, I think that with the season he's had with Inter Milan, I fancy him.
I have Belgium in the sweepstakes, so I kind of want them to do well. But the narrative around Belgium, Stephen, is that they have missed the boat, that they have missed that time to fulfil their potential. Would you agree with that?
There is a sense around Belgium that they, with all the players they have and the ability, and the, like at the last World Cup, they were just the sum of the talent, and Hazard was at the top of his game, that they just didn't get over the final line. And there's reminisce, I know Holland won in 88 with all those amazing players, but there's always been Dutch teams that have never really fulfilled the potential of what we're watching on a regular basis for club level. And there's something about Belgium But you never know. This could be the turning point. But like I said, the Fairies are in form. Lukaku, spot on. He is just so hard to play against. He's a goal scorer. He's been in unbelievable form. And like I said, the supply line he has behind him. And if Hazard has a decent amount of fitness and can turn it on for them, and you never know, this could be the tournament that starts to turn around for him again, get him back on track. He's going to want to perform. So yeah, massive team, but you can't rule them out either.
Okay, well, I'm going to get you to hold that thought, because we're going to cross back over to Tony O'Donoghue.
Tony makes her mind up for very, very poor goal to concede defence.
Oh, we don't have Tony, so we'll go back to that in a little while. So we were just talking about Belgium and their group, and Denmark are in there as well. And just Denmark are a team, I suppose, you'd nearly just associate with coming out and causing a shock, Stephen.
Yeah, I think we know Denmark very well.
Yeah.
I think over the last few years, yeah, I think I was joking before that we were in the CONCACAF, we'd still get Denmark in our group. But no, yeah, they're just organised, they're hard to beat. They're, you know, they've got a good unit together. They always seem to perform well, and this tournament in the past has always been something that they've thrived on, and you know, they went on to win it. It was a good few years back now, but they're a side that you can't rule out getting to the latter stages. Another team, and Belgium are going to have it tough against them.
So also in that group then you have Russia and Finland. So who do you think will be the ones that will come out then, Paul?
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it, with the fact that is a four of the six third place teams will actually qualify as well. So I think Finland will really struggle. I think Finland are probably the weakest team within the competition. So you'd imagine Belgium are going to come out handy on top of that, and I would probably fancy Denmark to finish second. Russia aren't the side that they were 3 years ago in the World Cup, so you're probably looking at Belgium and Denmark 1 and 2, and if Russia can beat Finland and pick up another point in along the way, you would imagine that they would qualify then for the last 16 as well. But probably a straightforward enough group compared to some of the other ones in there.
Yeah, for sure. And we're just going to go back to that group of death, because we didn't get to talk about Portugal enough, and they are my tip for the competition. And I think if you just look at the players, Ruben Dias, Fernandes, Jota, Ronaldo, Cancelo, like, they have so much balance across that team, Stephen.
Yeah, they're, again, another excellent side with real good depth. And you know, Dias, who's been really exceptional this season. Ronaldo is going to score goals whenever he gets the opportunity. Fernandes has been Manchester United's best player for the last few seasons. He's transformed the way that team has played and how they've gone forward. Yeah, another side that you can't rule out. And that group, it really reminds me of when we were in 2012 with Ireland, and we were in with Spain, Italy and Croatia, and you kind of just felt like we were in a hungry back then, and two teams from that group went on to the final, and that wouldn't surprise me with that group.
That's a terrible description. We were the hungry back then. It's really, really harsh. Now, I think it's time to talk about England, because they are the team that everybody is looking at right now. Obviously, they're so close to us. There's so many players that we are familiar with, so many players that were very close to us for a while as well. Are they winners, do you think?
Personally, I don't think so. I know Stephen fancies them a bit, but I think Southgate has a bit of a job on his hand first and foremost, actually, pick his 11. Is he going to go with the experience of, say, a Sterling and a Rashford, or is he going to go with the foreign players of a Mount, a Foden, and even Grealish in the warm-up game? So they have an abundance of talent in the attacking third, and you can't doubt that. But I don't think the spine of the team is good enough for me. Henderson returning from injury leaves a big hole there, and Phillips and Rice, I just don't think, have enough experience of those big occasions. Then you look back again, and the centre half position is something that worries me. Whether he goes with a 2 or a 3, I don't think they're strong enough, and I think they'll get exposed. And it has that feel, Marie, of they're building them up again. It's another golden generation, and I just don't see it happening.
Stephen?
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit more optimistic for them, because I just think with the talent they have going forward and the players that have been informed, the likes of Foden, but it's then whether they get picked if he actually plays them, and that's a huge decision for him. I just can't see how you can play those players. And for me, with the Maguire situation and him not being fit and Henderson not being fit, I think you have to go with a back four that's a little bit more solid. So your full back, whether it be a James or a Trippier, that's
more defensively minded than a Walker and a little bit better. So support the four, have that player in front, and then give those four or five just a license to go. But if you have Grealish, Foden, Mount, Kane going to bang in goals, I think they've got an unbelievable chance, and anybody's going to be petrified of playing against those players. It's just whether or not that defensive line and that, you said, that spine of the team is strong enough to allow them to go on and perform.
Okay, there is some action in the Republic of Ireland women's game against Iceland. We're going to check in with Tony O'Donoghue. Tony.
Yeah, there's plenty of action, and I'm afraid it's all going in the wrong direction as far as Ireland is concerned, because with a quarter of an hour gone in the game, Ireland are 2 goals down. The first goal conceded after 10 minutes, just after Ireland had forced a corner at the other end, but a quick break from the Icelanders and a ball over the top in behind the Irish defence. Grace Maloney, the Irish goal, came out, but she sort of made up the mind of Albert's daughter, who knocked the ball over her and into the unguarded net to give Iceland the lead after 10 minutes. And then 4 minutes later, an attack from the other side down the Iceland right hand side, the ball floated in, Jamie Finn went up for a header, the ball broke from that header and it fell to John's daughter, the Icelandic captain, and she stroked the ball home from close range. So we're only just in the 17th minute now, 16 minutes and 5 seconds on the clock. There's a huge breeze in favour of the Icelanders, so even Ireland forcing that corner would have been something good for them and important for them, but they are struggling to get out from the back a bit, like the men's team against Hungary and Andorra, so they have had to try and vary it, and 2-0 down after such an early stage in the game is giving them certainly a big task so far.
Thanks so much, Tony O'Donoghue. Another team I think that a lot of people could latch onto if they do start to go well is Scotland. Again, so many familiar players. We've got so many playing in the top six in the Premier League and also a lot in the top clubs in Scotland as well. But if they go down to Wembley and beat England, I'd say they're going to get a lot of fans, Paul.
Yeah, they will, and actually there's a certain likability about the Scottish squad, and being that underdog, it almost has that same sort of feel when Ireland enter a competition. But they've put together a really good squad over the last, in particular, kind of 2 years, and you look at the likes of a Scott McTominay, John McGinn, they've Stuart Armstrong from Southampton, they've Che Adams, they've a really good core of Premier League players who are playing week in, week out, which we're probably lacking. And you would imagine that the spine of the squad is going to be really good. The game against Czech Republic is vital for them. Like, they really have to pick up 3 points there, because the games against England and Croatia are going to be uphill battles. But if they can beat Czech Republic and nick a point, well, then they potentially go through as one of those third place teams. But certainly going to be a difficult team to play against. They'll be well drilled. They have a really good manager. And like I mentioned, they've good players that will at least ensure that they're going to be there or thereabouts in most of the games. And in the last 2 games against Czech Republic, they've actually beaten them twice. Czech Republic were missing a lot of players through COVID, but they'll be that confidence, and they've a bit of form heading into the competition.
Okay, now we are going to finish up on our preview in a minute or two, so I'm going to go to you, Stephen, for some predictions. So first of all, who do you think will be in the final?
France and Germany.
And who's going to win?
France.
Paul?
I actually don't know the equations well enough, because there's so many different patterns of how teams can get to the final, but there's something that tells me Germany, and I just have a sneaky feeling about Belgium that one of those sides will be there, and I think the Germans will win it.
Okay, and you have gone for Lukaku for the Golden Boot, and Stephen?
Kane.
Oh, young player of the competition?
Ooh, you put me on the spot. Mason Mount.
Stephen?
Mbappe, does he still qualify for that? Is he young enough?
He's about 16.
Okay, lads, thanks so much. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be brilliant. It's great to have all those games, and they'll all be on RT television as well. We're going to take a very quick break.
Game on 2FM. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. I'm delighted to be in the company of Paul Corrie. Paul, we're going to be checking in with John Kenny at Tallaght Stadium a little bit later on for the Shamrock Rovers Finn Harps game. And there's going to be fans there, which is brilliant.
Yeah, huge, Marie. I was lucky enough to be at the Champions League final 2 weeks ago, and there was 14,000 people within the stadium. And it sounds cliche at this stage to say that the game isn't the same without the fans, but it definitely isn't. I think it also brings a tempo to teams' play and a bit of an energy to people's play. So the fact that we're able to get them back into a League of Ireland ground tonight is a step in the right direction, and hopefully we can see more of that over the coming weeks. And hopefully with that, you can see the standard maybe step up a little bit, because I feel it has a major impact on how players address games and how they actually go about their business.
The League of Ireland has been on a bit of a break, and we've had a text in from Paul wondering, did the League of Ireland mess up by not commencing their midterm break this weekend to coincide with the start of the Euros?
Yeah, potentially, or maybe just forego the mid-season break altogether, because it does feel as if a lot of the attention is being drawn rightly towards the European Championships. It only comes around every so often, and there's probably not as much of a focus on the fact that the league is starting back up again. So could you have given the players a break during the first 2 weeks of the Euros and wait for the group stages at least to be complete? Now that Paul says it probably makes a lot of sense that they could have done it that way. But yeah, some of the decisions that go with the League of Ireland don't always make sense, but that certainly is one that would have.
Yeah, I suppose when they've been doing it for so long, and back when we were qualifying for these major tournaments, it's probably questionable then about changing it. But going forward now, when you think the situation that we're in right now, that it would make sense. But look, the League of Ireland is back. It has been quite interesting leading into the break. Shamrock Rovers, for a while we thought was going to be a one horse race, but they have stalled a bit, a lot of it down to injury, and Sligo Rovers now are the ones leading the charge.
Yeah, Sligo have been superb, and Liam Buckley's job up there has probably gone under the radar a bit, and it reminds me of the time he went into St. Pat's and he started to put a team together, and it took probably 12 months before he really got to where he needed to be. And you can see that with Sligo, some of the recruitment has been really, really strong, and he's got a good little flavour there between experienced players, your likes of your Buckleys and your Greg Bulges, who's just won player of the month, and then you've got the likes of Kenny up top, and younger players where they've got that blend of youth and experience, and they've picked up a lot of points. They came down to Tala recently and they were absolutely superb, and if they can kick on, and particularly if they can get fans into the showgrounds up in Sligo, it's a difficult place to be when they're going well. And if you can continue that form, I think there's no reason why they can't stay out in front, because Shamrock Rovers aren't necessarily the strength that they were last year. I know they've had injuries, but when you take even just Jack Bernard out of that team, it has such a massive impact on Shamrock Rovers.
Richie Dowell is going to be joining them soon. I actually saw him the other day around near where I live. He lives close by. He looks in great shape anyway, and raring to go.
Yeah, Richie's always in good shape. I know him well. He's my age and he's a superb professional, and probably a testament to the length of time that he spent over in the UK. I can assure you that it's not an easy place to stay and to remain relevant, and his fitness has always been his backbone. The style of player that Richie is now is probably different than the one that we saw at Dundalk. Dundalk was very focused in and around goals and late runs into the box, and maybe not being as involved in games, but popping up with important goals. Go back to the FAI Cup final when he scored the winner in the extra time. In recent times, when I've seen him play for Salford, he's sitting a bit deeper. He's almost like the protector in front of the back four. He wants to get on the ball a bit more. I'm not sure that's what Shamrock Rovers need from him. I think they need Richie to be box to box, a bit like Aaron McInniff was for them last year, and to get tempo back into their game. And if he does that, and if he brings the goals into his game that he's shown at Dundalk, I think he could have a massive impact. If he goes in and they try playing him in front of the back four, I think he's too similar to what they already have there with McCann and O'Neill. I think Richie needs to bring a dynamism back to that Shamrock Rovers team that kind of sparks them into life again, or reignite them, because they have been doing well, but I think there's more within that team.
Does he have the versatility to do that?
Yeah, I mean, Richie's 30 now. I'm 30. My knee isn't great, but I probably don't have the energy I did when he was 21. It's a lot. Like, Richie will have been done back-to-back seasons now as well. He would have started in, say, September with Salford all the way through to May, and our season doesn't finish till November here, so that's going to be testing on his body. Can he do that for the next 25 games and really run himself into the ground and drag Shamrock Rovers forward? Probably. The majority of the games, Shamrock Rovers tend to have the majority of the ball, so they're probably not the most taxing on the body. But popping up in goals on a weekly basis and keeping yourself mentally and physically in tune is a difficult thing, so it'll be interesting to see. But for somebody like Richie, he's he's driven, he's resilient, he probably suits him.
Okay, well, it'll be interesting to see. He's due back in July and they definitely need him because there have been quite a significant amount of injuries in their squad. Now it is time to talk curling with Shane McGrath. Shane, how are you? Not too bad. Great to talk to you as always. We have another weekend of wall-to-wall hurling, but there is a lot of other things on as well. So I'm not sure that if you recommend all the games like you did last weekend, which were all very good, by the way, that we will get time to sit down and watch them all. But I think if we're looking at where it's at this weekend, it is Group A, Shane, because there are three teams in contention for that top spot. So Galway head the table on scoring difference from Tip, who are taking on Cork in the final round. If Galway and Tip, who play Waterford, win, then Tip will finish top of the table, having beaten Galway in the head-to-head contest. But if Cork win and Tip lose, Cork will head the table and stay in contention to take that title for the first time in 1998. So I'd safely say, Shane, it's all to play for.
It's all very straightforward there, Marie. And I suppose what you forgot to mention is if Kilkenny will actually share the league with whichever one of those teams, as you have described there so very well, actually comes out on top. So it's a very, very strange league, you know. I suppose it is what it is, I suppose, for the year that's in it. But I mean, Kilkenny are going to be giant winners, and there won't be a league final unless either Galway, Tip or Cork actually meet Kilkenny in the championship. So you'll have a shared league, as you said. You know, I suppose from a Tip point of view, Marie, it's if Tip can do it, and if they are in inverted commas shared league winners, well then it would be the complete set for the likes of Paddy Maher, Brendan Maher, Noel McGrath, these lads, because they have everything else possibly that can be won in the game won, but they don't actually have league medals. Shamie Callan's the only guy in with Tip that has a National Hurling League medal. I don't know how many people know that, so I think that would be nice for those guys to complete the set. But other than that, Westmeath versus Limerick. Look, sure, Westmeath, they've been shipping massive scores. Their score difference is minus 89. They've conceded 17 goals. Limerick are coming into form. Can't see anything but a big Limerick win there again, because, you know, last bit of competitive action for them before Munster Championship. I think the Cork Galway one in 1A is probably the one you might see both teams really going at it, because, as I said, last competitive game, Marie. So, you know, no challenge matches, won't really be much time for internal games, really. So I'd say you should have a very good game there. You see both teams go really strong at it, like, because chances of meeting in championship are, you know, you're probably looking at maybe All-Ireland quarter, All-Ireland semi-final stage, like, or something if they were to meet. So you could see a good game there. And I think with Galway, with the form they're in, if they do go strong, I'd fancy them to go down to Páirc Uí Chaoimh and get a win. And then Waterford Tip, I suppose, it's interesting more so maybe on the sideline, maybe than the field, because you have the battle of the two Leams, Liam Cahill and Liam Sheedy, and two very proud men, and two guys who've done brilliant jobs with their count with Waterford and Tip respectively. And I think if either team here, Marie, has a chance to really go for it, for me it's Tip, because they don't have a Munster quarter final. They'll have an extra week's rest or an extra week to prepare, and they have a lot of guys coming back from injury or guys they want to see. So I think Tip will probably go really, really go gung ho at this, go really strong at it, and go down to Walsh Park, and you know, I can really see him getting a victory down there at the weekend.
Do you think Liam Sheedy knows his final championship 15 yet?
No, I wouldn't think so. Because, like, Shamie was only back the last day against Westmeath. That was his first day out. We see bits and pieces of bubbles. So while I could name 7 or 8 players here in Ophir that could be in the forward line, I don't think Liam definitely knows he's starting 6 forwards. I think probably more sure of the backs, I think, Marie. And, you know, the way things have really been shored up at the back. I mean, for me, it's you're looking at Cathal Barrett, Paddy Maher, Barry Heffernan. That's a serious full back line there. And in the half back line, then you're looking at maybe Shamie Kennedy, maybe Brendan Maher and Ronan Maher. Maybe something along those lines. So, you know, it's a very, very solid back line that Tip have. And, you know, I think if that's what Tip have got out of the league so far, it's that they're very, very solid at the back. They're not really conceding many goal chances, or not kind of leaving themselves open to one-on-ones with the goalie. So I think that's been very solid. So I don't think Liam Sheedy knows, but I do think he knows his top maybe 20-21 guys that he'll be using regularly in the championship, Marie.
And what about Waterford then? Like, you're talking about Tipperary being quite assured at the back, but it's an area that Waterford seem to need to sort out. And then, of course, that raises the question about Austin Gleeson and where he should play. And it's a question that's not going away, Shane.
No, it's not going away. And I suppose where is Austin's best place? It's hard to know. Like, I mean, for me, it is that kind of free roaming role where around the middle of the field, if you can. Why? Because he's very good delivery of the ball. He can also score from distance. So if you could afford to do it, but I suppose with the loss of Tadhg De Burca, and let's call a spade, like Tadhg De Burca is the best in the country at what he does, playing that extra defender, that sweeper role. Because sometimes if he does have to go man on man, Marie, he's very comfortable at it. But he's phenomenal at reading the play, cutting out space, and he's a serious sticks man, and his delivery of the ball is exceptional. So because it's horses for courses, and in that with Tadhg De Burca gone, you know, Waterford do need a quality guy, a quality delivery of the ball from that area. So, like, you know, Irla Daly could be an option. You might be able to push on Austin a little bit further up the field. But, you know, from what I seen him against Limerick today, I thought he looked good in the position down in Walsh Park that day. I'd say they probably will persist with him there at six and try and free him up as much to kind of get a quality ball in, kind of like a quarterback position almost, Marie. And also if the need arises that he can pick him off from 80, 90, 100 yards, like, so yeah, where's his best position? I don't know, but I do think Waterford are probably gonna go at him at six.
Okay, so 1B, as you mentioned, so Kilkenny are already assured the title of joint league champions unless they play the 1A winners at some stage later on in the summer. So they're taking on Clare in Cusick Park, and Clare always do. Well, they always think they do all right against Kilkenny anyway, Shane.
Yeah, they do. Like, you know, and I know, I'd say, that, you know, listen to this coming from Kilkenny players, you know, on other kind of outlets. They were saying that Cody used to always get them really psyched up when they were going to Ennis, because maybe they felt that the Clare lads had this kind of airs or graces about him, you know, and he always wanted to maybe come down and put the Clare lads in their place, maybe, you know. So whatever that is now, I don't know, but you know, it's always a hard place to go, like down to Ennis, like. And I think you'll have a very good game there at the weekend, Marie, because I was up in Parnell Park last week and I really liked what I seen with Clare. You know, obviously what Tony did was exceptional, you know, 20 points, but Cathal Malone was really good. Cullum Galvin got a good shift in. Aaron Shanahan looks to be coming back to form. Shane O'Donnell is coming into form. And like Rory Hayes and Aaron Fitzgerald were outstanding in the cornerbacks for him. And, you know, then you had the likes of David Reedy coming on and putting in a good shift. So I think Clare are actually getting back to their strongest team now. And I think Brian Lohan, you know, whether it was designedly or not because of injuries and lads being away and lads coming back from injury, he is now getting his best team on the field at the right time. And I think, you know, they'll go strong at this, because again, Marie, you know, it's their last chance of a competitive action, last chance for lads to put their hands up to say, I really want to play in the championship. I really want to play against Waterford in a Munster quarter final. And for the Kilkenny lads then, I think it's the same for Kilkenny lads, because their last bit of competitive action, yeah, they have that side of the group sewn up already. But I mean, if you're from Kilkenny and you're touch and go in Brian Cody's thoughts, I mean, here's your chance now, down in Ennis against the Clare team in form. I mean, if you can do it down there, well then you're going to be very much at the forefront of his mind when he's sitting down to pick his 15 for Leinster Championship in a couple of weeks' time. So I think you'll get a great game there between Kilkenny and Clare, because I think both teams will really see it as their really last opportunity for both groups to really get a bit of competitive action under their belts. And then the other games then, like Antrim and Laois, so like, you know, it's gas with Antrim, I suppose, because, well, for me anyway, that they probably didn't have even their strongest team out against Wexford last week, Marie, which the Wexford listeners now might like hearing that, but Corrigan Park, it's as Brendan Cummins called it, it's like going to Galatasaray. They just has that feeling about it, you know, and then that environment, and you had the fans up there as well. And I think Antrim were maybe looking at, yeah, they were maybe looking at the Wexford game to think, oh, whatever we can get out of it. But then they got the draw and now they're safe. So, you know, I don't know, like, what way Antrim will approach the game at the weekend with Championship coming up really soon. From maybe they might be afforded the rest, lads, and the Wexford Dublin game, you know, gosh, look, I suppose it's what is it really? It's just, it's a kind of a, the game doesn't really mean anything, but I suppose like other games, I suppose Wexford and Dublin camps will say, right, last bit of competitive action, do you want to be on the team or not? And that's what you're going to see. And I suppose Wexford, they hurl fairly well at home, so I fancy Wexford to beat Dublin down in Wexford Park at the weekend.
Okay, well, Shane McGrath, as always, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break and then we're back with Keith Higgins and Gaelic Football.
Game on 2FM. Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It's now time to turn our attention to Gaelic football. And Keith Higgins joins us on the line. Keith, there are semi-finals this weekend in each division for finals that might not take place. How do you feel about that situation?
Hey, Maria, how are things? It's a funny situation, I suppose. It's kind of nearly typical GA situation, really, isn't it? That we play a competition knowing that we mightn't have finals. But, it's not ideal, but I think... You know, the league probably served a purpose for a lot of teams, got them a few games, so I don't think they'll be overly concerned about it. While, you know, for the integrity of the competition, all that, you'd want to see finals, but, you know, I don't think teams are going to be hugely put out by it, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I guess in very simple terms, it is what it is at the moment. And in fairness, there are some really good games coming up as well. And I think that, you know, no matter what it is or what the you know, what's up for grabs, when you see Kerry and Tyrone or Donegal and Dublin playing against each other, you know, that's always an interesting matchup to see how they're going to get on when they are at the stage of heading into championship. I guess when you think of Kerry, they're in a bit of a different situation than Tyrone. Tyrone are going to get a really tough battle in the Ulster Championship, but for Kerry, Tyrone will provide a really good test, and you nearly expect them to put out a good side and to really go for it.
Yeah, exactly. I think this, for me, this is probably one of the most interesting games. You know, I think, well, you said, I think Kerry probably have, you know, looked good at some stages in their opening few games. Tyrone probably have a tougher campaign up against the Ulster teams. But I'm kind of just interested to see how Tyrone will go. I think, obviously, with all the talk about their new kind of expansive football and trying to play front foot football and all this, you know, against some of the northern teams the last few weeks, they probably haven't had as much chance to do it, whereas against Kerry, they might get that chance. So it'd be interesting to see how they've progressed on that and if they try and play a bit more kind of a kicking game or a more expansive game that they've talked about. So, but look, having to travel down to Killarney 5 o'clock on Saturday evening, it's going to be a tough task for them. You could expect Kerry to come out on top of that. But yeah, I think that's going to be a very interesting battle.
Yeah, it really will. And, you know, I think everybody as well has been quite fascinated about Tyrone and how they're trying to get that new style of play going. You know, more players up the field, they're doing a lot more attacking. But do you think they're getting their return?
Yeah, look, that's obviously going to be the million-dollar question until the championship starts, if they start winning games. But you can kind of see parts of them trying to work on that game and trying to be more progressive. You know, it's probably going to be a work in progress for them as well, given, I suppose, the way they've been playing over the last few years. I mean, they've kind of been very, you know, I wouldn't say restricted, maybe, but very confined to a certain style of play. So it's probably going to take them a while to get used to it. But look, there's been some, I suppose, kind of shining lights in that Tyrone team, some of the new guys coming in. So yeah, look, you'd hope it's going the right direction for them. And like I said, you know, playing against Kerry will give them a good test, and you know, like, it's going to set them up hopefully well for an Ulster Championship campaign.
There's been so much talk about the art of defending in both codes now, in hurling and in Gaelic football, and if Tyrone are going to go and beat Kerry, they're going to definitely need somebody that has mastered the art of defending if they're coming up against David Clifford. 5-16 in 3 games, how do you marshal him?
Yeah, that's, I'm not sure if anyone's figured that one out just yet. But look, I think, you know, if Tyrone can get that balance right, I suppose, from the whole kind of progressive game that they're trying to play with maybe the more defensive style that they're used to, you know, possibly they might be able to confine, you know, obviously they're going to probably drop a couple of sweepers back anyways. And like I said, it'll be interesting whether they can kind of get that balance right. But look, I suppose I don't think it's a case you can kind of just leave it 15-on-15 and leave one guy marked him there. He'll need help, he'll need cover, and look, Tyrone are well capable of doing that. They've done it for a long time. So, you know, I think they'll get the numbers back when they need to, and I can't really see that being a huge issue for them.
A lot of what we are talking about in that game can be applied to Donegal and Dublin as well. And when you look at Donegal and the setup that they have, the defensive setup that they have, is it good enough, and do they have enough man markers to try and contain that Dublin forward unit?
Yeah, look, I suppose going on the last couple of weeks, you'd probably say no. I think that, you know, they've been slow starters in the last 2 games. If they give Dublin a kind of a head start like that, or a lead like that at half time, you know, I think they'll, you know, they're not going to be able to claw their way back into it. You know, they did well against Armagh, come back into the last weekend, and, you know, I think there was a lot of talk of them conceding those goals against Monaghan as well. So if they give Dublin them chances, like I said, they're going to be kind of out of sight. But at the same time, I suppose the one thing with Donegal the last few weeks, and I mentioned it last week, they just didn't seem to have the same kind of purpose or intent about them in their defending. Like, they were getting numbers back, but they just weren't getting in the tackles, which is very un-Donegal-like. So look, you'd imagine coming up against Dublin, particularly all the talk as well last year about them being one of the teams that could put up the Dublin and not even get the chance, you know, that they, there should be a bit of bite to it. But, you know, saying that, they're out again 2 weeks' time against in Championship. So whether they'll go full, you know, flat out for it, it's hard to know. But you'd imagine they should be kind of champing for this game.
Yeah, but given the situation that Dublin are in and probably the lack of challenge they're going to face in the early stages of their Championship run, you'd probably imagine as well that they are going to use this game as a big test and that they could go for it all guns blazing. And when you look at who they have and even who they haven't have that they haven't played yet, like they've had 13 different forwards in three games without Rock, without Mannion as well, and all doing really well, all making a case for themselves, like Pascal, Bugler, McHugh, Mullen, Byrne. They have a lot of players there who are making an impact. So does Desi know his best 15 yet?
Yeah, I think, look, if you look at Dublin last couple of years, like, like, while they have a kind of very strong panel, I think the starting 15, you know, never changes a huge amount. Like, maybe a couple of changes every day, but even I think the starting six forwards, the first three games, you know, it might be a change or two, but, you know, the likes of Conn, the likes of Kieran Kilkenny, these guys are always going to be regular starters. So I'd say he's a fairly good idea. And, you know, like, I mean, Dublin will be well used. This was not having a huge challenge in the Championship up until, you know, semi-final stage the last couple of years, so I don't need to be overly concerned. They'd have got what they wanted out of the first few games. Fairness, Dublin go out to win every game they play in, whether it's league or attempt, whatever it is, and they do the same this weekend. So, you know, they'll just do what they normally do. They'll go about their usual business, and, you know, as we've seen in the last few years, it usually works out well for them.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's even strange to be talking about them in such serious terms at this time of the year. But the relegation playoff games will probably have a bit of a Championship feel about them, really, because everybody wants to stay in Division 1 because that's where the real competition is. And they're quite interesting matchups as well, Armagh, Roscommon and Monaghan and Galway. And Armagh have kind of been the surprise package in many ways this year. They've proved that they can compete at the top table, but they really need to stay there now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, these two games are probably as interesting as games as there is all weekend. I mean, like you mentioned there, Armagh have shown some really good glimpses in the games that they've been playing, and really unlucky, I suppose, to be down in the relegation battle. But, you know, they'll be kind of ruined the chances they had against Donegal there the last year. Like, I mean, they probably should have won that game. And, like, you know, looking back over the last couple of years, the amount of times they've met Donegal or Roscommon, you know, in Division 2, and those games, like, they've never had it easy, and Roscommon have come on top a lot of the time. So this would be a big one for Armagh. Like I said, they won't want to go back down to Division 2 after the kind of the campaign they've had and the performances they've put in. So, and, you know, similar to the Armagh or the Monaghan-Galway game, I mean, you know, both teams won't be happy to be down there. And particularly, this was listening to Paul Joyce's comments after the game last weekend, he won't be happy with having to travel away. So you can imagine there'd be a good bite to the Galway boys as well.
Yeah. Game of the weekend, though, I have to say, Mayo Clare.
yeah, definitely going to be a bite on that one. But, and again, look, from a Mayo point of view, it's a massive game. I mean, you know, they would have set out their stall early, that, you know, obviously wanted to get back to Division 1, kind of got through the first three games handy enough, but this will be a big challenge to Clare. Have been very impressive so far. And, like, it's a shot to nothing for Clare. They can go all out and give it a go. I know they're out again in 2 weeks' time, Championship against Kerry, but, I mean, this is a huge opportunity for them. One big performance and they're up in Division 1, which would be a massive step for them. So, yeah, again, going to be a very interesting game, and one Mayo definitely won't be taken lightly.
Yeah, in an Ennis as well, so bit of an advantage there. Okay, Keith Higgins, enjoy the weekend. It's set to be a good one, and we'll talk to you again soon. We're going to cross back over to Tony O'Donoghue. It's halftime in that Republic of Ireland women's friendly against Iceland. Tony.
Yes, Maria, I'm afraid at halftime it's now Iceland 3, Republic of Ireland 0. Ireland are being taught a lesson here, I'm afraid, although I do think the conditions are a huge factor. There's a really strong breeze which was favouring the Icelanders, and the Irish found it very hard to get out from the back. They were struggling against that breeze and indeed against the Iceland high press, but they went behind on 10 minutes. A simple ball over the top, the Irish defence was stretched. Grace Maloney, the Irish goal, came out, but she couldn't do anything about about Albert Stotter's finish, 1-0 after 10 minutes. It got worse 4 minutes later. A simple ball floated in from the right-hand side. Jamie Finn contested a header. The ball fell to John's daughter, the Icelandic captain, for 2-0. And really, Iceland were finding it so easy to break through the Irish rear guard, passing through and around the Irish midfield. New striker, Aoife Colville, came on for her started for her debut, of course. She only got her FIFA international clearance on Tuesday, having switched from Australia. But herself and Heather Payne up front having very, very little joy. They did force an early corner. Jamie Finn had a run and a shot, and Katie McCabe had a 1-2 with Denise O'Sullivan. She ran half the length of the pitch and took a shot from just outside the area, which flashed wide. And then 4 minutes before the break, the third goal for Iceland. First of all, a shot that came crashing back off the upright. It fell kindly for West Ham's Brynsdjar daughter, and she finished past Grace Maloney. So Vera Pauw with a lot to do at halftime. You wonder how much the wind will be a factor and whether that can be in Ireland's favour, and if they can try and gain a foothold once again into this game in Reykjavik in front of 1,500 spectators. But Iceland ranked 17th in the world, 17 places ahead of Ireland, teaching them something of a lesson, a steep learning curve this evening for the Republic of Ireland women, who trail at half time by 3-0.
Thanks, Tony O'Donoghue. We're going to take a very quick break.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. I am in the company of Paul Corrie, and a little bit earlier we were talking about how good it is to have fans back at games, and our reporter John Kenny is experiencing that firsthand. He is at Tallaght Stadium for Rovers versus Finn Harps. JK.
Exhibition of watercolours, isn't it?
It's a bit quiet here at the moment because there's no fans in yet, but the last time we had fans in numbers here was on the 28th of February. 7,522 witnessed a cracker of a game, the home side beating Dundalk 3-2. And now 15 months later, we have tonight a test event. No away fans included, but there will be 1,000 home fans.
Past John Kenny, so we're going to have to come back to him a little bit later on. Look, there is a really busy night of League of Ireland tonight, Paul. It's not just Shamrock Rovers that are in action against Finn Harps. We're going to see Derry City and Bowes play as well at 7:45. Sligo Rovers and Drogheda are tomorrow at 7:45. Dundalk and Waterford and Longford Town and St Pat's as well. And look, we'll start with Derry City and Bowes. Home form is a real concern for Derry at the moment. They haven't won at the Brandywell this season, which is really, really surprising.
Yeah, it is. And you think of teams within the league who could really do with fans and difficult places to go on away days. And it's definitely the Brandywell is right up there, the McBride Stadium, as they call it now. And to be fair to the Maria, I think they've turned it around a bit since Rory Higgins has gone in there, and he's put a bit of structure on them. And they look a much better side than they did at the beginning of the season. Clean sheets are still hard to come by, and they've only had two of them even since Higgins has gone in. So that's definitely something that they can work on. But as a whole, I think Rory Higgins, since he's gone in, will be really pleased with how things have gone. The first couple of weeks were looking really grim, but they've started to put a bit of form together, and no more so than patching in the middle of the pitch. And he's come in from Dundalk at the tail end of last season. He's been fundamental to what has been very good about Derry in recent weeks. He scored some goals. He's really instrumental in their play. And if you're to think ahead to tonight, that's somebody from a Bohemians perspective, particularly somebody like Keith Buckley in and around the middle of pitch, you need to get to grips with, because if he can get them ticking, if he can start creating chances, you could well see that home form potentially turning around tonight.
Yeah, well, they definitely needed it. Dundalk and Waterford is kicking off a little bit later as well. And Dundalk are expected to confirm the interim appointment of Jim McGilton as the boss for their remainder of the season. Do you think that's a good move?
I mean, it's not what he was brought into the club to do. He was more to sit in at director of football level, and he was to take things and put structures in and around the club and maybe focus a bit more on recruitment. So the fact that he's had to plug the hole as manager and he's going to go in there full time, it seems a bit of a strange one, is it? The fact that they're trying to kill two birds with one stone now, and they don't want to invest in putting a manager in, given where they are within the season and the unlikelihood that they're actually going to win the league. Maybe they're just seeing this as you know, just something to get them to the end of the season before they start to maybe restructure again. But it's a funny one. Like, there's a lot of noise off the pitch at Dundalk, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of stability. I don't think the fans seem to be happy. And the fact that Magilton is now going in a manager, I don't think it's going to be the right fit moving forward. I think Magilton as a director of football, 100%, I think he can do a great job there, but I'm not sure he's going to be the long-term person to turn things around at manager level anyway.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on as well, how that develops over the remainder of the season. So tomorrow then, Sligo Rovers are playing Drogheda United and Longford Town are playing St. Pat's. But now we are going to turn our attention to horse racing, and we're joined on the line by Jane Mangan, who's going to look ahead to Ascot for us. Jane, how are you?
I'm very well. I think this is the time of year when the sun comes out, the leaving cert is on, and the top hat and tails are broken out across the water for what is always a really special week's racing.
Yeah, it is, Jane, and it's one that is going to be really exciting this week as well, this year as well. A little bit of news earlier today, it emerged that last year's Epsom Derby winner Serpentine has been supplemented for Thursday's Gold Cup by Aidan O'Brien at a cost of $30,000.
Yes, it's not common. I think the last Epsom Derby winner to contest the Ascot Gold Cup was 51 years ago, so that's quite a gap. It's not something that I expected, and I think when it comes to the Ascot Gold Cup, all eyes will be on Stradivarius because he is chasing that record-equalling attempt, fourth consecutive Ascot Gold Cup, attempting to equal the exploits of Yates a number of years ago. But Serpentine will have to be at beyond his best to beat Stradivarius, because I think John Gosden's horse loves these conditions, loves this track, and he's got Frankie Dettori on his back as well.
Okay, so plenty to look forward to in that one. So Shane Foley had to watch from home last year due to COVID restrictions, Jane. Can he finally get that first winner at the Royal Meeting this time round?
Yes, it must have been very difficult for him to watch Alpine Star last year. He would have really fancied her in the coronation, but I hope he might get some compensation this year, and as you say, bag his first Royal Meeting winner with Lucky Vega, perhaps in the St. James's Palace. It's likely to be that horse's final start of his career before he's retired to stud in Australia. But he's a Group 1 winning juvenile. He ran very well in the Newmarket Guineas, and I'd forgive him his run on heavy ground last time at the Curra. So I think him in the St. James's Palace, his biggest opponent is probably Poetic Fair from Jim Boulder, so a really strong Irish hand in that race. And of course, Jane will also have a number of rides for Jessica Harrington across the week. I think Ace Ozzie has a dark horse chance in the Jersey Stakes on the final day as well.
I'd imagine Joseph O'Brien will be hoping his star juveniles can bounce back to form.
Yes, I think Thunder Moon and Pretty Gorgeous, write them off at your pearl on the base of one run. Both of them Group 1 winning juveniles, and I think conditions will really suit Thunder Moon for whatever race he goes for. He is in the Jersey. He can go for the St. James's Palace, but he is a horse that with a lot of class, and he's run at Newmarket is too bad to be true. Pretty Gorgeous, it was a season debut at the Curra last time. Don't write her off on the back of one run. And Joseph, likely to be well represented in the Ascot Gold Cup as well with his Melbourne Cup winner Twilight Payment, and perhaps Master of Reality, a horse that finished third in the race 2 years ago.
Ruby was chatting to Aidan O'Brien last week, and I know he raised his eyebrows about his plans for Love, but it looks likely that she will make her seasonal debut in the Prince of Wales Stakes on Wednesday.
Yes, and what a filly she looked like last year, and we're really dying to see her back. Now, it's a big step. Prince of Wales Stakes on your seasonal debut is a huge ask, but she did look a class apart last year. Some critics will say that she didn't beat a whole pile, but it was the way she did it. She's going to have her stablemate Armory in there, but likely her biggest opponents are likely to be former or last year's winner Lord North and Odira for James Franshaw, a very, very talented filly in her own right. But hopefully Love can get off to a good start this season. Aidan is obviously going to have an abundance of runners across the week. I think Point Lonsdale is a serious chance on the last day in the Chesham Stakes.